At the World Cup, big match tomorrow between the U.S. and Iran. Winner goes to the knockout round, loser goes home. Naturally, there are politics here. Over the weekend, the U.S. Soccer Federation showed on social media a flag of Iran minus the emblem of the Islamic Republic. Tehran then called for the U.S. to be banned from the World Cup. But let's take this moment to visit soccer fandom in Iran and across the Middle East. What does soccer reveal about their societies? Reporter James Montague has reported on soccer across the Middle East for more than two decades. His book is When Friday Comes, a reference to fans leaving Friday prayers to go straight to the stadiums. And a new edition is just out. James Montague is with us now from Doha. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on.
So James, this dust-up over the Iranian flag goes to broader protests that we know are happening in Iran. U.S. Soccer says it was trying to show support for the protesters. You know, those of us watching on TV also saw the Iranian national players seeming to show their support as well. They did not sing the national anthem in their first World Cup game. For the Iranian fan, I mean, you spent many years in and out of Iran. What does the regular person, the regular fan, make of this, that their protests are now being talked about around the world?
Even in Iran, football has this kind of place that where it has been almost the soul of the nation is channeled through men's football in particular. And this time, there is a kind of tug of war going on between the protesters, the people who want the national football team to stand up on their behalf. And on the other hand, the government who want them to show respect and love for their country and for the flag. When the national anthem wasn't sung in the first game against England, and I was in the stadium, the pressure on the players was almost too much to bear. They were being watched by the fans, they were being watched by the regime, and even though they were booed, it wasn't even clear whether they were being booed because people were angry they hadn't done enough, or they were being booed by pro-regime figures who were ashamed that they didn't sing the national anthem. If it reflects anything, it reflects that Iran is an incredibly complicated place with complicated power centers.
Yeah. And I mean, your journey reporting across the Middle East is such a window, you know, soccer being this lens through which you and we, the reader, can understand these societies. I want to stay in Iran briefly and ask you about the issue of women being banned from stadiums in Iran. And you write about an Iranian soccer fan named Sarah who finally got to see a live game at the 2018 World Cup. Tell us her story briefly.
I mean, she's a remarkable woman. I mean, I was actually in Tehran. I've been to Tehran many times. I've been to Iran to report on football because obviously you can't tell a story of football in the Middle East without telling the story of one of the most populist and powerful nations in football as well. But when I went in 2018, I really wanted to go and see Persepolis versus Esteghlal. 100,000 people in the Azadi Stadium. Incredible experience. And, you know, I saw a tweet from Open Stadiums, which is this kind of activist collective almost that was founded by Sarah, which isn't her real name, by the way. And she let the world know that 35 women had been arrested trying to get into the stadium. And so I contact her through social media. We use encrypted messaging apps. And she, you know, tells me the story of these women, puts me in touch with many of them. They agreed to meet me for interviews to get the story out, which is very, very dangerous thing for her to do. And we eventually meet and she tells me her story about how she's been pursuing this policy, which was almost looked down upon by a lot of kind of liberal activists and women's rights activists in Iran, because there were bigger issues to deal with, right? It was largely through her activism that at that World Cup, it became this huge issue. And the regime had to kind of step back and they did start letting in limited numbers. They've rode back on that a little bit now. But amazingly, she went to the 2018 World Cup and I met up with her in St. Petersburg. And she'd never been to a game before. And the match that she watched was the first game of the World Cup, Morocco versus Iran. And Iran score a 96th minute winner, like 6 minutes into overtime, literally like the last touch of the game. And yeah, it was a moment I'll never, I'm sure it's a moment she'll never forget, but it was also a moment I don't think I'll ever forget.
Wow, what a story. And we don't have time to go into all your travels, but a couple stops I want to visit briefly with you. And one is during the Arab Spring and pro football players' roles in the protests in Egypt. I mean, how important were these players and their fans to that moment?
One of the things that was interesting is that when I first wrote When Friday Comes in 2008, I would go to Egypt and I went and met the ultras, which are these organized football fans, very much modeled on Italian football fans. And it's a very anti-establishment culture, very anti-police, very anti-authority. But little did I know that over the years, what actually happens is that in authoritarian societies, if the conditions are right, the football stadium is a place where civil society can find roots. So when the revolution came in 2011, these people that I'd met in 2007 were front and center in Tahrir Square. And not only that, their songs that they were chanted on the terraces of the Cairo International Stadium, they became the songs of the revolution. And it made me really realize the football stadium in the right conditions can create forces which really do have political consequences because these are essentially young people finding an outlet against authority to organize. And, you know, I met these people, they were so inspirational. And now more than ever, people are looking at the Middle East and the Middle East First World Cup and trying to understand football in an Arab, Muslim, Middle Eastern context. And these stories for me illuminated those in the best possible way.
And that takes us to Qatar, where you are, you're in Doha. You have been going to Qatar for more than two decades. You know, for the rest of us, on one hand, you know, these games are raising our consciousness as far as allegations of corruption, human rights abuses. But it can also, you know, perhaps give us a cartoonish version of Qatar, this, you know, this astroturf place, as some of the, you know, the news reports might suggest. What are we getting wrong about Qatar and especially its soccer culture?
Qatar, compared to the UAE and you know, Saudi Arabia and places like that, what's interesting to see now is that it was always seen as kind of quite a liberal, relatively liberal, relatively reformist type of place. You know, Al Jazeera, for all its faults in terms of reporting on what actually goes on in Qatar, it revolutionized media in the Middle East. And it, you know, it spoke about royal families in the Middle East in a way that hadn't been done. And that's part of the reason why Qatar then falls out with its neighbors, because, you know, those royal families don't like being told the truth about what's going on in the world or in their backyard. And so, you know, Qatar winning the World Cup bid put such a big microscope on it. A lot of the criticisms that it has received, whilst a lot of them are legitimate, a lot of them are kind of in a context that takes it out of the Gulf. When I speak to workers, and I was in worker camps today in Doha driving around, you know, you still hear terrible stories of the kafala system, this kind of system of kind of almost sponsorship, a bondage that sticks workers to their employers. Technically, it has been dismantled under a reform process that has been kind of forced because of the World Cup. The reality is, of course, that these are still some of the most exploited workers in the world. But compared to the UAE and compared to Saudi Arabia, every worker you speak to will say, thank God I'm not in Abu Dhabi. Thank God I'm not in Riyadh. But with football culture, this is a new place. You know, this was founded in 1971, this country. It does have a new football culture, but its football culture is, it's a kind of melding of a kind of traditional Gulf Arab state with ultra hyper-capitalist modernity. And in a way, that is what you've got here. You've got this $200 billion World Cup. You've got a brand new metro system. You've got incredible stadiums. But the reality of that is that it's been built on, you know, a system of like an economic system that has left a legacy, which probably will, certainly in the West, maybe not in the global South so much, but, you know, will have tainted it somewhat.
Yeah, yeah. James, finally, the upcoming game tomorrow between the U.S. and Iran. If you were sitting in Tehran with an Iranian group of fanatics, what would they be watching for in the game? And give us a prediction for this game.
Of course, there's going to be, will they sing the national anthem? I think almost more interesting to see the crowd and the crowd's reaction and how the Qatari authorities are reacting to expressions of support for the protesters. Because at the moment, the Qatari authorities are stamping down on anything that would kind of challenge the Islamic State. At the same time, people want to see, especially after the kind of last minute victory against Wales, you know, it reminded people that this is a very powerful opportunity to show something positive about Iran. And if I really had to think about what's going to happen in this game, the motivation of those players, I mean, you saw the pressure they were under in the first game, which probably contributed somewhat to their performance. But now,
yeah,
the
lost
US,
6-2 to England. Yeah,
exactly. You got the US, the Great Satan, everything, every political issue you can imagine can be traced down to this game. Not traced down to this game, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be relevant. The regime is going to want to smoke the US. People are going to want to get Iran get to the second round for the first time. Weirdly, most people are going to be on the same side. And I don't think that's something you can say about Iran for many months, if not many years. So I reckon I'm going to go for the same. I think it's going to be 2-1 to Iran. The US going to go home. 2-1 Iran. It's going to be a replay of the 98 game, I think.
James Montague is a journalist who has written for a couple decades about soccer in the Middle East. His book is When Friday Comes. James, thanks so much for the time.
My pleasure.